Welcome to the Technoid Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon, sitting here at WGN Radio with my friend Vic Piscucci, managing partner at Lightbank. So Vic is a regular on the show, obviously. He's been on here many times. Vic is going to give us a little rundown on what's going on at Lightbank and what's going around around the city of Chicago and abroad in the tech community, what they're seeing. I think I'm going to try to get Vic to agree to be on this show on a regular basis to actually listen to startup pitches as if he doesn't get enough of them already. But we're going to have him come in here. And here's the thing, like, Vic and I are the kind of people who, while we enjoy to pump people up, I think, you know, I read a lot of your posts and stuff. I think you like to inspire people.
Yep.
But there's also the flip side of your post, because almost every one of them is like on the back of an MMA mat. And that person is inspired by the fact that they just got their ass broken in half. And so the inspiration is, don't let it happen again. I want to bring that attitude to the startups that are coming into the show. I think, and I'm like as at fault as anyone at this, of like, you know, I guess the idea that you got an idea that was worthwhile and you took that idea from something crazy in your head to a vision that you've somehow been able to start building, whether it's just filing papers or whatever, is worth a very small applause. It's like, you know, good job. You had the courage to step away and try this. And without that, there is no next step. Right. So like, I'm happy about that. But we've gotten to this place where the adoration for founders, like my producer Sam and I were talking about this the other day. There's something called a founder's credit card.
Oh, yeah.
VIP experiences. Yeah. It's the dumbest shit ever, unless you have it, in which case I'm kidding.
No.
It's the dumbest shit ever. And it's like, we let people and founders think that this is like, you get the cart before the horse. Yeah. And that's not how this goes. And so I think starting right now with you, we're going to start having companies come in here and just tell them a little bit of the truth.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, the art of the start is an art. Like, anybody can start. Like,
yes.
It doesn't take a lot to go and start
I've
something.
Started several times, so right. That proves that.
And, you know, I've got plenty of starts, plenty of failures, and some wins along the way. But the ones that really win are the ones that can make it through the pivots. They can make it the grind. They get their asses off that mat and get back up, because every great idea does change. Like, every great idea. Look at any of the companies we're in right now. Even look at, like, Snapsheet.
Yep.
Snapsheet started at Body Shop Bids. Dumbest fucking idea ever.
Yes.
Really, Brad? Like, start with the worst
job. I mean, you can say it to Brad. I can't. I have Brad on the show, and Brad and I have, like, we've got a relationship where, like, well, my hand is fucked up now, but I want to go golfing with him because I think I can beat him. I know he's a great golfer, but I think I'd take him. He does not seem to receive criticism like that well.
But
I mean,
like,
at least now, you know?
But now, but like, the guy pivoted. He grinded it out. Like, they went from the brink of failure, didn't give up, him and CJ both, and now he's got, what, almost 450 people working for him?
Yeah.
Got contracts with most of the major insurance carriers, redefining what a virtual claim is. And it's not because he started a business. It's not because he had a great idea. Yes, it took something to start a business.
Sure.
I'm not going to take it away. But he fought. He kept fighting. And, you know, it's that fight that invigorated a whole team around him and brought other people going, yes, I want to get in that fight with
him. So, like, that's a piece that I want to pick up with you. And like, so this is like, listen, you know the deal already. This is how I get business done. I put people on my show and then I corner them. And then I tell them this is what I want. And they know, like, I'm going to publish it. So this is my cornering of you. I want to have a regular segment where we have you come on. And this is literally what I want to do. I want to have startups come in or pitch or call in or video and whatever we got to do. And I want to talk about moments like that after they hang up. Sometimes we can say it to their face, but after they hang up, I want to literally have that moment where you go, Vic, you've been in the ring. You've, like, literally startup ring and physically in the ring. When you see a person respond the way they did to the criticism, what do you think? Because I think it's crucial. And I don't want to get into like a bickering back and forth. With I don't even care, to be honest with you. It's your future. Like, I just want to hear, your response to criticism.
Like, everyone's going to take criticism, especially when you're doing a startup. By definition, if you're doing a startup and you're going to be one that's going to be successful, you're doing something no one else has done. So that's going to do nothing but bring criticism. Everyone's going to tell you how you're not smart enough, how you don't have the right idea, you don't have this. So how they handle criticism is going to be a key element to how successful they're going to
be. So let's go to the next piece of this, because there's a part, there's like, I've done enough interviews with people that I feel like I've started to, sometimes I can actually literally feel it and other times I have to think about it, but I've started to identify these certain responses, these physical nonverbal responses that I get from people across from me that tell me whether or not I think they'll make it.
Yeah.
Like, there's a defense mechanism that shuts down and I know you're not going to make
it.
I see it immediately. It's like, you're a closed down. Like, that's done.
Right.
And then I see the ones who get quiet, get pissed, and I can, like, see them getting, they're like going to work. We're still talking. I'm still making fun of you, and you're like already plotting my death.
Right.
And I love it.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that has gone, it went really well for a minute, and now it's, I feel like we're kind of a brink, and I think Lightbank is really a good example of like how to do things differently, and it is in a very unique position, I think, also to like maybe help change this, and it's the mentorship thing.
Yep.
This conversation, and I literally have no idea how you feel about the mentorship stuff. I have a general feeling, but I don't know. I think the right mentorship is amazing, but I think the idea of mentorship literally, as a founder, literally pisses me off because there's so many crappy, well-intentioned but not well-positioned mentors to help you. And we've built these networks where, not to go on this tangent that I've already went down the tunnel, but like when Y Combinator got started, the reason that it was so massively successful was the mentor network. They did it right. But then all the knockoffs along the way, not to name people in town, but like they've built a mentor network that is it's a piece
of
shit.
There's no value there. Like, it just because someone's like belongs to some country club in the North Shore, they're automatically.
But I can make intros for you, dude.
It's like, get the fuck out. But yeah, there's like the people, and you know, the whole startup business, and you've seen it, I've seen it. It's a very personal business, right? Like, I know there's people I'm going to be great mentors for and people I'm not. And that doesn't mean they're not going to go be successful with somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, I'll do that personality profile with them as I'm talking to them and think, you know what? This isn't going to work out for us, but I know three investors that you're going to be great working with. And I'll pass them on like that. And that's what people have to understand. It's like, you got to find the right match. You got to find the right thing. And quite often, it's a lot of contrast to compliment, right?
Yeah.
You know, what I'm good at or how I communicate might be the exact opposite of the startup. And it might work really well for the CEOs. And you've met a lot of our CEOs, Kyle, Brad, and the rest of them. They're all fantastic. And you just have to see who you're going to work best with and how to handle that criticism.
But see, that's the example. That's the Lightbank thing that, and I don't want to be critical because, like, to be honest, there are people out there who maybe don't like Lightbank. And the reason that they don't like them is because of the way you guys do things. Right. But the difference is that how much time do you not piss away because you waste time on deals? You're like, you left pissed at me. Yeah. I left liking you and think good luck. We just aren't a fit.
Yeah. I'm not going to sit there and be everyone's freaking fanboy and, you know, hashtag crushing it and all the other crap. I was just on San Francisco last week. Yeah. Everybody's like the super bro and they're crushing it. I'm like, whatever,
we look bro-y, but we're not. Exactly. That's the thing. We surprise you. We sneak in like the Trojan horse. And then all of a sudden,
you know, it's even the whole mentality, like the people out here, the startups out here, like, they know how to get shit done. They know how to grind it out. Like, I was talking to someone who was on a panel, like I said, just last week in San Francisco. I'm like, I'd rather find brilliant, passionate men and women, give them their first $1.5 million and let them go after it for a year, prove their shit out, get their shit done. And you know what the response was from my West Coast brethren? They're like, well, $1.5 million doesn't go real far around here. It was like,
private jets.
I was like, you're telling me you get someone that's got passion for their idea, knows their business, knows they're going to have to grind it out, knows they're going to have to fight, and someone gives you $1.5 million here, go and run, they're not going to pull off something amazing? That's what Weisberg
did. Most of the people here did it with like $100,000 of their own money. I did it with a credit card.
Exactly. So I'm like, let's go. And people are like, oh, no.
So we're having San Francisco companies calling first. So we can just take them out at the knees. It's such a good point. So like another, you know, on that subject, the technology piece. Mm-hmm. This is another thing that I think we really can get into with the companies that call in. And I'm non-technical. I don't know how technical you are, but I don't need to be technical to tell you whether or not it's a good decision to invest in it or how you would do it. What I have noticed, and I talked about this with Mike Rothman, our partner at Technori, just this morning, the idea that I raise $5 million, whatever the number is. I've raised $5 million because we're going to build our technology. There's a lazy/showboatiness that I've even seen peek its head in Chicago a little bit, which is a little frustrating. From the CTO co-founder person in a company who's decided that they're going to hire 10 developers onshore.
Yeah.
And they're going to build it in-house. And it's like,
that's crazy.
What you're doing is going to be knocked off. Like, it's not we're not talking about proprietary here. We're talking about just making shit work right.
Right. Right. Just get it done. Get a product in market. See what the market has to say about it.
Like, yes.
It doesn't matter that you have this prosaic code that's written in the next generation, this, that, or the other. It's like, does your shit work? Do people like it?
You've seen it.
Are you adding value?
You've seen how much of the old code that has had to be completely ripped out because everyone, you know, you build on it. You're a big blockchain guy, so we can go kind of in this direction. Like, blockchain to me is very interesting from the startup landscape, not even as much from a technical standpoint, because I'm not fully grasped like you are with it. But I one thing I identified from it was it reminded me of the, you know, internet 1.0, where you're looking at it and going, this isn't the final product, but this is something that's going to be built upon and built upon and built upon. And that's another thing that when you see the founders coming to the show, I don't think that they are thinking about what does my product look like in 5 years. They're thinking, What is the final product look like today? And it's like, who gives a shit?
And then hopefully we'll get founding teams. Like, every founder should be able to attract a co-founder. Like, even start with, like, one of the companies we're in now that we're kind of resetting is Carly's.com, right? We have a new CEO.
Yep.
You're going to meet.
He's coming on the show soon.
Yeah. And then, but the CTO, Clay Johnson, like, Clay has his fingers on keyboard every day banging out code.
Yep.
He's not like hiring teams and reams of developers. Like, yep. Yes, he needs some help to get some of the lifting done, but like, just to get some scale.
It's got
to
be his signature.
Like, I'm selling leasing cars online.
Yeah.
Like, I'm leasing cars.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't need like this great blockchain or some type of solutions. Like, I need fundamental technology. I need a great UI. I need pricing up front. I need the experience.
Some tech support.
That's it. It's like, it doesn't have to be this thing. So, but that goes back to the Chicago roots. Like, make it real. Have it add value and get to market and run.
So let's spin it around. I mean, you get pitches all the time. This is, for everyone listening, this is going to be your fair warning. Because when you come on the show, if you're one of these people who comes in here and you pitch this, my sympathies are not with you for what's going to happen, because this is the real deal. What are the three or four things? I look at it in four segments. Like, for me, just to kind of set the table, I look at from the founder side, I want to see someone who can be developed into a force. Do I see that natural instinct in you to like go after it? When I look at the product itself, I don't care that the market is ginormous. If the price of whatever it is good and the niche is there, then it proves itself fine. But it's got to be something that everyone within your sect of market is going to love, whatever that might mean.
Sure.
I want to see something that is at least has a barrier where it's like not knock-offable immediately. Right. There's got to be something behind it that's, you know, a barrier to entry. But at the same time, simple enough that you can execute to the mission.
Yep.
That's like my area. What are you seeing in companies that make you either go crazy or you think is great?
So probably two things, and then we can kind of drill down from there. First is the team, right? We're early stage investors. We're all about the entrepreneur, and it's going to be that team. It's going to be that those warriors that are in there making it happen day in, day out. So one, if they start telling me with how pretty the school is they went to or how pretty the company they just came from, I'm like immediately out. Like,
or if they give you like Northwestern colored stuff on your wrist.
But just tell me, I have a chip on my shoulder where I went to school, all that fun stuff. However, it's like, why are you doing this? Like, if they tell me their story of why this, then I'll get a sense of who they are.
Yep.
That tells me it means something, that they're getting after it, that this is like, show me why you're the team to do this and why you're better. And it's something about your background, what drew you to this, why you're going after this problem. The other thing, like, I keep keying in on all these founders is like, what's your unfair advantage? I want to see some unfair advantage. Now, that could be the team itself, but it's likely some type of distribution partnership or some technology angle. It's definitely not a freaking patent. But
somebody write that down. Unfair advantage. No, I'm not kidding. That's one of the things that I think I have never been able to. Number three on my list, I can't verbalize well. It's like there's something. The something. You just nailed it. Unfair advantage has got to be. And this is, we're going to get very deep here.
Yeah.
This isn't just startups. This is life.
Yeah, totally.
Like, the people, this is a PSA for everyone out there who's in college right now. Stop. Whatever money you're, don't stop school. Well, maybe. But like, the bottom line is like, whatever you're spending your money on trying to become, if it's not something that you have an unfair advantage, and it's not something that comes natural to you, you're not naturally good at it, go find some other shit to spend your money on.
Totally.
Because you'll never compete at the highest level, because everyone else who's naturally gifted is going to beat you.
Because if it's worth doing, someone else is going to do it.
Yeah.
So why are you going to win? And there better be something about your solution, your business, your service, whatever it is. And then there's got to be something, why you and why this, right? Show me. And so by people telling me that story of why they're doing this, I'll get some sense of team and I'll probe a little bit on that. And then once we get into their strategy and the roadmap, it's going to be like, okay, where's that unfair advantage? Show me where it is. And like I said, it's got to be something.
Yeah.
It's got to be clearly articulable and it's got to be plain.
And it could even be chemistry on the team. You could just have a team that's like, we're entering a space that's, it's not, I'm not going to say it's like diluted, but it's tough, saturated market. But this team executes, like, I mean, honestly, kind of like the Brad and Eric dichotomy. Like, they're not best of friends hanging out, boozing and stuff. They just work really well together.
I mean, when Uptake started, it started with Brad's relationship at Caterpillar.
Yep.
He's like, you have a big problem. I know how to use technology to solve big problems for big companies.
Yep.
And there was thousands of other companies out there trying to do that.
Sure.
Thousands of it. But you had someone like Brad and that team that he put around him that can execute and get things done.
And access, and they knew that they could depend on you to do it the right way. Because the biggest thing, and this is a good segue to the next circle, this is, you know, I think, and this is actually, I want to get your feedback on another part of this going back, but we'll get there in a second.
Sure.
The next kind of thing that I notice with companies, and I'm sure you see this, is like, we talk about market fit. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing for them to say like, yeah, there's $7 trillion spent on this, blah, 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 blah. okay, fine, but are you the person who's going to build the next Uber of or the whatever of? Mm-hmm. Are you going to be that person who's going to build it all the way there? Or are you going to be a person who's going to be acquired? My money is that you're probably going to go out of business first, or you'll be acquired, if anything at all. Maybe you'll mm-hmm. get to the top. So the question there is, to your point about Brad and Caterpillar, if you are not a person who has those contacts or understands the problem you're trying to solve, not at your micro level, but at the macro level,
right,
where everyone else in the world's competing, honestly, I kind of push back on, yeah, I'm out. Cause yeah, I just, I feel like we've talked about this on the last show you were on, the percentages of companies that fail,
yep,
and how I feel like the numbers are kind of fucked up, because yeah, if you look at it objectively, yes, the numbers are bad for startups, but if you actually have a trained eye and are not stupid,
right,
the numbers are not nearly as bad as they look. Like, you right, shouldn't be 90% failure. Like, right, you're a failure. If you see something where this is the right team solving the right problem with the right resources and the right path, success should be like at worst 50-50.
Right. And especially that team, like, can they attract the right team around them to get to the next level? Because yes, most founders don't take it all the way through because some of them don't want to, because it's yeah, not fun for them. Like, they want to take a company 0 to 50 and then they want to start all over again.
And that's
like,
fine.
That's fine. They've all got their own thing. But then it's like, are they the team to take it this whole way? And what does that look like? And, you know, a lot of it is too, like, most companies will sell and yep, they'll sell for, you know, the math is out there in PitchBook. They sell for a couple $100 million,
yep,
right? So how are you going to use a few $1 million and use it effectively and efficiently to grow to the next level, so that when you sell for a couple $100 million, it's like a 10X for people,
yep,
as opposed to like every great San Francisco company that raises, you know, $100 million and sells for $125 million. That's a bad freaking outcome, yep, right? Because no one made money. So those are the types of things, like, can they deploy the capital? Can they attract the right team? Are they going to be efficient with that use of capital? And are they going to create something sustainable?
So the question I want to ask you then is, you see these companies that come in, and I'm not going to name names. There's one that we recently listened to who had all the right things, right founder, great experience, not from that market, but proven that were successful in a different market.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I've already seen that, like, you didn't know that market either and you were successful in it. Sure. So I'm not so scared away with it. But here's the $1 million question. It comes with, we're the first to market. We're the first to do this. And with that is sexy in the first sentence until you stop and think about it. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Why?
Yeah.
Where are you at when you see companies that come in? And of course there's a million answers, but where are you at when you see companies that come in and it's like, I think we're the first person to do this for whatever reason. Is there skepticism? Is like, what's your take?
The whole first mover, first to market, I'm immediately skeptical on that.
Yep.
Because if it's worth doing, someone's going to do it, or they're going to try to do it differently, or they've already done it. So how are you going to do it better, and how are you creating a market? And it's a function of, like, are you creating a whole new market around you that didn't exist?
Yeah.
Or are you going to penetrate an existing market? And the whole first to market, I just don't see it. It really hasn't proven out in my mind, or my pattern recognition as to how it works in kind of this version of the internet and this version of technology, because things move exponentially faster than they did 5 years ago, than they did 10 years ago. So, and they're going to keep moving faster. So being first,
I feel like it's like being the first out of the boat at Normandy.
That's right.
Like, that's not really where I want to be.
Yeah. Guess what? MySpace was first.
Third is best.
Yeah.
Third. Let the first two guys F it up and fall in the water.
There was MySpace, Friendster, then Facebook.
Yeah.
So which one did you want to be? Right.
Not, yeah. That's just it. It's like, and we hear this. So like, this is okay. So this is awesome. We're like peeling the onion back for everyone here. This is the kind of shit you're going to get on a weekly basis of like this, like drilling down. Cause this is awesome. So then you look at founders, and this is another one I know you get all the time, and we get it all the time as well on the show, is the proprietary. Now, I'm not talking about IP and stuff that's like code that you're creating, you know, whatever. I don't want to share this, or I don't want to give you these numbers. I don't want to give you this and this and this. And it's like, dude, I hate to break it to you. You're not the first person to create this thing. Where do you, like, what do you tell companies who are reluctant to go to market early because they're afraid that someone's going to like rip them off?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if you can't put it on the cover of this radio show or anything else or podcast and put it out there and still succeed, you probably don't have anything.
You're going to get knocked off as soon as you go out there. If you don't, you should worry, because it must be the other thing no good.
Like, IP, people use it to like bloat up ridiculous valuations. Like, well, I was in the landscaping business for the last 5 years and I'm bringing all this IP to my online landscaping business. I'm like,
I can make that assumption.
Really? Like, so therefore you need like a 20 pre? I'm like, that makes no freaking sense. It's like, you either know the industry and you've done your homework and you're going to execute or not. I don't want to hear about this amorphous IP.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, ultimately the words that we're covering here for everyone listening is there are so many. So I guess, I mean, we're kind of talking to two different types of people. You got one side of it, you've got the actual founders, and then the other side is the investors. Right. On our side, we look at non-accredited through equity crowdfunding, but also investors, and you guys obviously have your fund. I think that fundamentally, we have gotten to a place, and I, like I said before, I don't think I help this cause, but like making rock stars out of entrepreneurs and investors and people like that, because the truth is the really good bets are the ones that are like the Brads that are, mm-hmm. Both Brads, the Brad Keywells mm-hmm. of the world, as well as Brad from Snapsheet, Weisberg. You've got to be obsessed with process. You've got to want to build something great. Mm-hmm. And I just noticed that I think a lot of the companies that we are working with and seeing are obsessed with what the end thing looks like.
It's not all glamour. Like, everyone thinks it's going to be like, oh, I'll be in the cover, I'll get my TechCrunch headline, and it's all easy, and I just make a couple moves. I mean, it's a hard freaking grind every day to get your process right, to get your product right, to understand the market, to keep going back again and again and again to see if someone will buy, to see if you can get distribution partnerships. And it's not glamorous. And everyone thinks it is because there's like romanticized the miraculous entrepreneur and all these like, you know, the cowboy and the cowgirl that cuts against the grind. No, it's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Right. There is no quick, easy fix. Like all the one, like here's the other thing I fucking hate. Like, oh, I'm going to growth hack my way into this.
If I hear the word growth hack one more time, I swear I'm going to lose it. Right. I don't even. It's called logic.
Yeah,
it's common sense. I mean, common sense.
Especially like you're MySpace, you know, fintech. Like, you don't growth hack your way into getting someone's financial credentials. You don't MVP someone's financial security, right? It's like you're dealing with people's money. You're dealing with their insurance. You're dealing with their financial security. You don't get to half-ass it or find a quick fix. Like, you have to earn their trust.
One screw up and the whole thing is over. Right? Our money's gone. Yeah. The whole thing is over.
I'm like, go growth hack the next Instagram. Like,
yeah.
Go growth hack there. This stuff, especially fintech, financial services, you're not growth hacking.
Well, I think this is sort of the precursor for what's to come. We're going to get the live show rolling. We're going to talk a lot about companies and investors. And I think one of the big lessons from this show is going to be, as a founder, obviously, by the time you make it to the show, you hopefully have paid attention a little bit. But as an investor, I think that more, I would like to see, I don't want to say a changing of the guard, but I'd like to see a little bit of a changing guard. I know you guys already know this. There's kind of a gap that's created in Chicago, and this has happened everywhere. But we're the original folks that invested in the Ship Bobs and the now Farmers Fridges of the world that are starting to get their money out when the Googles of the world are putting their money in. Those original VCs and angels have moved away from that $50,000 to $250,000, $300,000 round, and they're now closer to like the half to a million. So there's a gap, which we're trying to fill a little bit with the equity crowdfunding thing. But honestly, I'd like to see more accredited and unaccredited investors come to the space. But here's the deal. You can't come in here after not being here for 10 years and be a moron. Right. Dumb money is not asked for here. We do not need your dumb money. Well, maybe your fund does. Put the money in the fund. But let smart people make decisions. But what I'd like people to do is to start paying better attention to why companies succeed and why founders pivot and do right things, rather than paying attention to they raised X number at X valuation. It's just, we need to get a little bit smarter, I think, still as a community.
Yeah, I mean, you got to talk, like, I hate it when like someone comes in to pitch me and they tell me all about their fundraising strategy. I don't care about your fundraising
strategy.
You're
here.
I care about your business. Like, how are you going to succeed? How are you going to get to a national rollout? How are you going to develop your product? Like, don't tell me about what you think Series A investors are looking for. Like, I don't need that. Like, what I want here is your business.
So you just made the pitch for Technori. So as we're launching, which you're, you know, initial advisor on, as we launch this co-op and we get everything kind of under the tent that we're trying to get to sneak around and put out there for 2019 for Technori, you just talked about like 12 things. But the last one was a perfect example of the companies that we're looking for, the companies that come through who say stupid shit like that. And it's a matter of knowing us being able to tell you what you should already know that you don't.
Right.
Lots of companies are coming through and it's like, honestly, I mean, you're probably better off not taking investments from some of the people you're pitching with. Let us help you not say stupid stuff. And more importantly, let us help you find investors that are the right fit for you. And then we can go from there. But there's like, a lot of stuff.
We'll coach you up. We'll give you the help you need. And then crowdfund a couple hundred grand. Get your product to market. Get in there. Let's get something working. And then
it's like we're calling this the non-mentor. I'm not a mentor. I'm here. Listen, I want to make money too.
Right.
So you got to make money for me to make money.
Right.
So I'm not a shoulder for you to cry on and whatever, like text me in the middle of the night. I mean, you can if you want to, but like that's not what I'm here for. I'm here to tell you what you don't know.
Right.
And the truth hurts sometimes. I think the truth is a good thing. So let's kick it on to quickly wrap up on with like what's going on with Lightbank. What are some new news updates and things like that? Where can people learn more about what you guys are doing?
So, you know, we stay, the website is up and running, but Lightbank's always, it's business as usual. Focus on entrepreneurs, focus on making sure you're adding value each and every day and helping their businesses grow. So we've closed 3 deals in the last couple of months, most of which will start to come public now in the next month or so.
Nice.
We'll get 1 or 2 of them here on the show. Yep. Well, probably all 3 eventually.
Yeah, I'm sure all on
the show.
On.
We'll get them on the show. And it's just been, you know, like I said, we stay true to our entrepreneurial roots, writing big seed checks, a little bit into A, and just helping people.
What kind of companies are you guys still? I mean, obviously, fintech is a big play.
Fintech's a big thing of it because with my background, and then Chicago's such an awesome market for insurance,
yes.
Right? Great insurance talent, great technology.
We're pushing
together.
Up against Boston.
Yeah,
I feel like we're like it's a joke saying that, but it's not.
No, I mean the quality of the deal flow we're seeing in the insurance space, the fintech space is great. I'd like to see more consumer products. I'd like to see more consumer businesses. It's time to see that.
Do you think Chicago is the place for that?
I think it can be. I think we've had some great consumer
success. We certainly have had some success. It's just, you know, Spot Hero and things like that. But this, well, actually, you know what? This is a great, it's actually a good time for it because the pivot, I think investors in Chicago were a little bit, you know, skeptical, nervous as the beginning of this sort of tech boom here. And I feel like there was a reluctancy to invest in things that you couldn't, that you're going to take a lot of capital to get going, which consumer marketing takes.
Yeah.
But now with a new, you know, some success stories, maybe we'll get there. I think we're
getting better talent around the consumer space and people realizing they got to do more, like unfair advantage. So we talked about, like, just don't tell me you're going to plow a bunch of money into Google and Facebook ads.
Yeah.
And that's how you're going to be successful. Like, you've got more experienced entrepreneurs that understand distribution, understand a B2B2C model, understand how to get after it. So I think we're seeing better consumer plays happening. And I think we'll see more over the horizon. But it's, you know, business is good.
Sweet.
Great entrepreneurs. Great deals.
Good to hear.
So
we need to do some drinks again soon, I think.
I like it.
Maybe the next show we'll do it's just like kind of
a cocktail.
A little cocktail hour. We're going to start doing a little cocktails with Vic. Sounds like a plan. Vic, thank you so much for taking the time. We'll probably see you in a couple weeks.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Of course. You can catch this episode of more at technori.com. You can follow me at Katoon, follow Technori on everything social at Technori. You can get us now on Spotify, which is my favorite place to go because I don't really know why. I just really like Spotify. So I don't know. That's where we are now. And then, of course, we just launched our new weekly newsletter, Totally Rehab. Check it out. And here's a little hint. If you subscribe to the newsletter, anyone who's a Technori subscriber from here on out gets free access to all of our events, which is pretty awesome. Let other people pay the money so you guys can have fun and drink on the house. So go ahead and go to technori.com, subscribe there. I promise we won't ping the shit out of you. It will just be one weekly newsletter that has investments and events and things like that that are worthwhile quotes from around the community, like the one you heard from today from Vic. That's all. Boom. That's a wrap.